listening to the Hometown Losers, the St. Louis Sports Podcast, with Josh, Adam, and OJ.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back here to the Hometown Losers Podcast. This is session number 46. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host here, Adam and OJ. Gentlemen, how are we doing today?
Good evening. Good evening. And glad to be here on 222. It's a great day to be here because guess what? The Blues are playing and I'm happy about that. So.
Absolutely. OJ, how are we doing tonight?
Same. Yeah. I just watched Brandon Saad and Pavel Buchnevich score back to back, basically.
Hey. So.
It's pretty sick.
Yeah, it's actually, I had the game up a little bit, or I had the pregame on, but then I ended up having to do a bunch of stuff on my computer. We're facing the Islanders, right?
Tonight? Yes, we are.
I remember. Yep. Okay, yeah. Yeah, that's, I haven't awesome watched, though, unfortunately, the game.
So those were like, but literally back-to-back then, damn.
Yeah.
It was, Saad with the power play.
Saad scored, yeah. And then Buchnevich scores basically right straight afterwards off
the fucking face. Hell yeah. That's how you do it. Let's go, Buch.
Well, speaking of the Blues, let's go ahead and jump into it here. Just give our listeners here the quick update. So since last session, they've gone 1-2. So they are now 29-24-2, excuse me, for 60 total points. We're still fourth in the Central. We are 16 points behind the Stars now for the lead of the Central, which is two more points than it was last session. So we've lost a little bit of traction in that race. We are still in the second wildcard spot, but there is a separation now that it's our 3-0.
Three goals now.
Oh, let's go, Blues. Wow. And just like that, it's 3-0. Damn. Boom, boom.
Jesus Christ.
By the Sinked Island.
Okay. Yeah. We're not. This is damn good luck. Wow. Ever since we've started this podcast, they've gone from tie game nil
0-0
to freaking 3-0. Damn. All right, let's keep it going, boys. Anyway,
we trying. Oh, was that Buchnevich then? I'm trying to see. Yeah, it was Buchnevich.
Oh,
Thomas DeKeyre.
Buch again.
So there you go. Get him a Hattie.
Yeah, give him a Hattie.
That'd be nice.
Buch back to back.
Yeah. So getting back onto it, we are still in the second wild card spot. But there is a separation between us and the Kings, who now have a 6-point differential between us. We're still chasing in the West, the Canucks for 20 points, obviously. We're still 8th in the West, which was the same as last week and last session as well. We were 17th in the West, in the NHL. And we are still 17th. We're still 20 points behind the Canucks, which is obviously the leader in the NHL. So obviously we're having a good game right now.
Yeah, three goals in 32 seconds.
Yeah, but
so that's crazy. So if you went to the bathroom, you're going to be pissed.
There was only, three goals between two lines.
Yeah.
In like 30 seconds.
32 seconds. 32, three goals, 32 seconds. Holy shit. That escalated quickly.
I just love how one of them was scored by the same line. Oh, they went out and scored so fast on the first one, they kept him out there.
I didn't know that the Blues could score a field goal there, you know?
Right? Apparently the two Buch goals came 7 seconds apart. Back-to-back goals.
And it's kind of ironic because the main topic, since we, you know, kind of talk about the Blues and we're all kind of wondering which way this is going to go.
Right.
You know, since last session, last week, when we were 1-2 and just didn't look great in the past couple of games. That's what, I mean, the question I had for you guys was maybe this is the start of a slide, but maybe not anymore. But, you know, obviously you got to keep it up for the full 60. But, you know, Adam, what's your take here on, what everything's
overall,
been going on?
I think you know, I'm just going to stick with the, you know, under Bannister, I still think that we're moving in the positive direction and we're still in the playoff, you know, race. I think we definitely have a real possibility of landing a spot, probably a wild card more than likely. But I think we have a real chance at it. I mean, we've been slipping a little bit lately, but, I know that Justin Falk and Persevich. They're both on the IR, and they actually called up Bolduc from the AHL, so from Springfield. So I've heard good things about him, and obviously Drew Bannister obviously has seen good things from him. So I'm excited to see how his debut goes against the Islanders. So I think that, so. This is the thing. They have really cleaned up on the power play for sure. I've definitely seen a major improvement there, but you know, I still think there's some needed improvement on the 5-on-5 here, you know.
Yeah.
But obviously tonight, they're looking pretty good. It's a good start so far.
And listen, Adam, you bring up a really good point about Bannister, because under Bannister, the Blues team is 16-10-1. So they're moving definitely in the same direction as we talked about a couple sessions ago, and how hard it was going to be able to keep up, you know, the same thing that they were running, which was, you know, winning like 60% of the games. I think that we were looking at, they were 7-4 when we started to take a look at it. I'm like, you know, you lost ground in the playoff run. I don't know if that's going to be something you're going to be able to keep up. Well, they're kind of keeping up.
They're
with that
keeping
pace
up.
Right now.
Yeah. I mean, as long as they keep winning, because obviously, you know, Trashville's knocking at their heels here a little bit. So
yeah, we're technically tied on points. So,
yeah. Obviously we got to keep winning, for sure to remain in it for sure. I mean, obviously there's still, you know, decent amount of hockey left, but obviously we don't want to get behind in this, you know? So, I think it'll be good.
3-goal leads are the worst to have in hockey, especially early on. So, you got to keep your, I know that's what the saying is for me. It's always been 3-goal leads, because I feel like, especially early on, and like you get a two goal lead anywhere in a game, that is definitely where you people tend to get more relaxed. Mm-hmm. But the 3-goal lead early on, to me, I've seen and been part of teams that have lost because you just like completely take, and once you take your foot off the gas, sometimes it's really hard to put your foot back on the gas. You know what I mean? So I'm always kind of wary about that.
Shouldn't put your foot off the gas.
There you go. Yeah,
100%.
I was going to say, hey, Booch is going for a Hattie tonight, so he's got to keep pushing.
Yeah.
So he's one shy. So anyway, let's go. But it's interesting. Kind of
what this team does best so far this year, that's kind of how they turn it around, is that if they can get ahead, then they can also just kind of sit on you, because they just kind of do the park the bus thing. So they're kind of used to playing kind of like that. It's been working for them, at least against worse teams. Like the Islanders are certainly weaker competition than some of the teams they've been losing to recently, with the exception of Nashville, you know. Shouldn't have lost to Nashville. Mm-hmm. But other than that, what, you lost to Toronto? Like that's
– Yeah, good team.
And I think the Blues may just not have the horses quite to hang with the really good teams. So – I don't know. I think they're a lot closer than people think, though, because they have some prospects getting ready to come up that might be pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, Jake Neighbors has looked phenomenal this season.
He really has. Honestly. Yeah. No doubt. Yeah. And he's, Albert, I think, Thomas, on the same line, I think, as our newbie. So they're on the second line together. So I believe they were. Shen. Yeah. Yeah, with Shen. Yep.
Put a couple tough guys out there with him.
OJ, what were you talking about, Robert Thomas?
Oh, I was going to say he's like a superstar now. Or I don't know if you could call him superstar. I think he's that – he has that good. I just don't know that he gets that publicity. But
yeah, he might be the superstar on the Blues team, but not necessarily superstar in the NHL's eyes.
Well, yeah, but he's – not everybody could be Connor Bedard, right? So
yes, because Robert Thomas should be, because he plays –
play for the worst fucking team. And you're like, oh, I'm a superstar.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, look at me do Michigan girl.
Sorry, I have to give him shit. I mean, sorry, I have to. It's like they're over there just blowing this dude, and it's like, come on now.
And see,
like,
I'm telling you, this is what really pisses. This is what really pisses me off, is that the NHL, so NHL.com and ESPN, that was the only highlight of that game that they had.
Yeah, I know.
And I'm like,
and they
lost.
Won
that game.
And they
we won that
lost.
Game. Like, come on, man. Like.
Not to mention when we were playing some other team completely, they had they had Edmonton versus Chicago coming up, and the whole every break they had to advertise it like the Battle of the Connors coming up next.
Oh my god, go to hell. I mean,
it's a random game in the middle of the week or something, you know, like, right. Or maybe it was on the weekend, but it's just a random regular season game.
In all reality, though, I'm not going to sit here and blame him for it for sure, because I mean, obviously the NFL was doing a lot of that shit for the Travis and Taylor shit or whatever. It's like the camera was just focused on all that crap. And it's like they're just doing their thing. And it's the same with Connor Bedard. He's like, hey, I'm just here to play. I didn't necessarily like, hey, I want to go to fucking Chicago. It's just they obviously, unfortunately, you know, ended up with the number one seed or wound up with the pick. So, of course, they're going for Bedard. But it's more of a F you to Chicago.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. I think the motto of the Hometown Losers has been fuck Chicago.
I think we actually had an episode a while back about that. Oh, fuck Chicago.
Yeah. We like to buy a vowel.
We'd like to buy a vowel. Exactly. I've also, just heads up too, I've also been reading that, speaking of Booch, apparently he's surfacing in some trade speculations, even though he's obviously, he's like number 7, I think. What was I reading earlier? I think it was like he stands number 7 on the Athletics. Yeah, on the trade board. Anyway, I thought that was interesting. Yeah. I mean, obviously his impressive performance, especially in this game for sure. And
he's one of the best wingers out
absolutely.
There.
Yeah. But I guess because of the complexity of his contract and some strategic direction from us, you know, there might be some potential market dynamics. that might be influenced whether he stays or gets traded. I don't know. It'll be interesting.
I disagree with that. Go on, OJ. Sorry.
Well, I was going to say he's basically the best non-injured winger left out there. So, you know, if a team really wants to add like some punch to the top of their lineup, he's probably the number one target.
Right.
That said, I don't think the Blues want to get rid of him because I don't think Armstrong. Yeah, I don't think Armstrong thinks this team is as far away from being back to contending as fans think also. Right. So, like, he probably can see some of the guys coming up and everything.
So the great rebuild that everybody was thinking it was going to be maybe a little soft. We're laying a little softer.
Well, yeah, it's a retool is supposed to be short. That's what they say they're trying to do, right?
Right.
So, I mean, I've seen people say, like, oh, they're still not going to be contending when he signs the next contract, you know, when he's 30, 2 years from now. It's like, really? Yeah. You don't think so? I doubt that. Like, I kind of have a feeling they will be. But because, I mean, you're going to have some defenseman contracts come off the book by then. You'll be able to shake the team up and really get into that defensive core then. So I'm pretty positive about it. So, and I guess it's the optimistic outlook. You want to keep Buchnevich on your team because
for sure,
whatever
you
get back for him is probably not going to be as good as Pavel Buchnevich unless you can get some sort of hockey trade. Now, if you could get some sort of hockey trade for like a Pavel Buchnevich caliber defenseman, that's the only thing I would trade him for. Cause I think he's a stud, not just cause he can score, but like I see him dive to break plays up and that stuff all the time. Like he's just an all around good hockey player.
Yep.
You don't find those guys a whole lot. So.
Right. Yeah, and that was my point as well, OJ, was that I just don't see them trading away Booch because what are you going to get in return? I don't think there's anything out there right now that's going to excite you because it's not like one piece is always going to put this team into the Western Conference Finals and into the Stanley Cup contender, conversation. That does just it's not there, right? I mean, you could literally, it would obviously never happen. But okay, Edmonton wants to trade away Connor McDavid for Buchnevich straight up, right? Obviously, you would take that deal in a heartbeat. But that is like Connor McDavid's not going to transfer this team overnight into okay, we're going to get into the Stanley Cup final, right?
And that's not even realistic anyways, right? So
of course not. I'm just using
I get it. If there's some phenomenal trade or whatever that's just like the offer is it's impossible to refuse or whatever, you can't turn it down.
Well,
but
it's not going to change anything, where the team's at right now. That one move is not.
Yeah, you're right. The only reason why you would do it is, I was just going to say real quick, the only reason why you would do it is, if it makes sense as far as,
It has to be a no-brainer.
It'd have to be a no-brainer, and it would also have to make sense from a contractual perspective as well. Like, we're getting somebody, and, you know, like, we can – it's not going to hit our cap real hard either, or they're going to take care of – or they're going to end up, you know, taking the cap for – or taking the cap hit for us or something. You know what I mean? Like, it'd have to be structured really, really well.
Yeah. Now, I just don't see us like trade away picks at this point, because, you know, from what all the experts are saying, this draft is going to be a relatively weaker class. The next draft they're projecting is going to be stronger than this upcoming draft in the 2024 draft. But the 2025 draft is still going to be relatively weak. So it's not like this past draft that we just had where there's a lot of strong really contenders out there. So I'm not terribly too certain, but, you know, OJ, I do want to ask a question. Speaking of this year, and kind of where we sit at into the playoffs here, and again, as I said, you know, OJ, I'll start with you. Are you kind of worried about the gap that's growing between the Blues and, like, say, the Kings? You know, now it's a 3-game separation since it's 6 points between us at the second wild card spot and the first wild card spot. And obviously, you still got that 20 points behind the Canucks. Which is 10 games, you know, so that's significant. It looks to be like the NHL has the cream rising to the top right now, right? So what's your thought process on that? Are you worried about that?
I mean, nah, not really. I mean, we're not going to catch the Canucks. I mean, put that out of your head. But
I know that.
As far as the Kings, they could easily stumble again. They've done it before. We kind of stumbled here ourselves, but we also were going through a little bit of a tough stretch where we played some good teams. Like tonight we're playing the Islanders. They're not as good of a team. So, I mean, there's enough season left that if we just play good hockey, we'll make the playoffs no problem. And once you're in, whatever happens, happens, right?
So exactly right. Yeah. That's go on.
And I was just going to say, and the other thing too is you're comparing it right now where the Kings literally are coming off of a 4-game win streak. And obviously we've had a little bit of a rough patch here. Things are going to kind of go, you know, I think sway a little bit back and forth. I still think that we have every opportunity to remain in a wild card spot. And honestly, not all that long ago, we didn't think it was a reality. I think it really is a real possibility. I mean, we just got to get back to winning again, but overall, I think that, like I said earlier, I'm going to reiterate that we're heading in a positive direction. I think that we are could be real contenders, at least getting into the wild card, you know, those discussions once, you know, playoffs come around. I think that we have a real possibility because if we keep playing at the consistency that we have been, I don't see how we couldn't be. You know what I mean? Unless one team.
Yeah, we still have 27 games left.
Exactly. So I'm not worried myself personally. Like I said, obviously the Kings are, you know, they're on one right now, but, you know, we could easily catch them and tie them up again real easily. I mean, we're, what did you say? Like 4 points behind them?
Six
points. Okay. Well, so 3 games back, so to speak, you know, potentially, obviously give or take some ties or whatever going into OT. And technically looking at wins and losses, I mean, I know that obviously the Kings have been they're racking up a lot of points in overtime losses and OT. But the thing is they're not getting the wins. They're, you know, I mean, obviously at the end of the day, the points matter for sure. But at the same time, we actually have a better winning record than they do. So.
That's right.
Just making that point.
Hey, I'm with you on that. They should get rid of the loser point. Or actually, I'd like to see them go to like the MLS kind of way of doing it. With the three points available. Yeah.
It's actually funny that you mentioned that, OJ, because that was another hockey fan that Adam and I both used to work with, Robert. Adam, he always brought up that, you know, an overtime game all of a sudden becomes a 3-point game rather than a 2-point game. So it makes more sense to have 3 points for a win, and then, you know, the OT winner gets 2 points, and the OT loser gets the extra point. They get that point, right?
Right.
Totally makes sense. It balances itself out, and it would be very interesting to see how it would lay out. But, you know, all of a sudden now teams that would, you know, be winning, you know, in regulation, I think it really puts a dramatic push to games tied 1-1 going into, like, you know, last 5 minutes of the third. Obviously, you're trying to win the game. But you're also not trying to concede either. I think it gets you an extra little bit to take extra chances to try to go get a full 3 points rather than losing a point to those guys. Yeah. You know what I mean? So,
yep.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because
the goal in this game, because otherwise it's like otherwise it's like okay, well there was no repercussions for going into OT if you end up winning, because it's like, well, you still got
two points. Yeah, it's the same thing, right? But at the same time, you're mitigating your loss percentage essentially. You can take it more easy in that last 5 minutes, knowing that you're going to guarantee yourself at least 1 point.
Yep, that's very true.
Yep.
Yeah,
you got to have a little skin in the game there.
Yeah. Well, we know that the NHL is definitely not going to change anytime soon. But, you know,
hey, I like the idea of it at least. So,
yeah, it makes sense, right?
For sure.
All right, guys. Well, let's move on here to STLSC, who had a big game on Tuesday.
Took
on the first game in the first leg, our first game in the first leg of the first round, the CONCACAF Champions League here. STLSC won 2-1 over Houston, and they'll be up by one goal on aggregates going into that second leg, which will be in Houston. Just some quick stats here before we get into our takes on it. We had goals from Tim Parker on a header at the 61st minute, and then Kijima at the 90th minute, our new addition.
Kijima.
Which was awesome and very impressive to see a new addition be able to make that that move or be able to make an impact to the team.
I was going to say that announcer kept the way he said his name made it sound like he was calling Jose Kijima.
Kijima. Like, yeah, that's what I heard too.
Hispanic parent too. And I was like, it's Jose.
Honestly, it's like half the time, because I watched the highlights, but like half the time it was kind of hard to understand the guy because he was speaking with such a Hispanic inflection in his voice. Nothing against him, but it was just like, okay, I think I understand what you said there. And then he starts speaking fast. You're like, okay, I've lost. Like, I just got to watch the ball at this point.
I didn't think he was too bad, honestly.
No, like, he wasn't. You know, he was
did have to do the whole thing himself. Like,
yeah.
That's pretty rough.
He was entertaining. Entertaining. So, like,
I do have to say the production quality was bullshit. Like, Fox they could have produced that better, but I guess it's on FS2. So, like, I guess they figure who cares, right?
Right. Right. Everything else, care. Go to Apple or whatever going forward. So, well, I mean, obviously outside of the CONCACAF, but whenever they get back to it, so they're going to have their own crap now.
Yeah.
Exclusively.
So getting to some statistics of the games, it was 6-2 in shots in favor of City, 15-6 in shot attempts in favor of City, 8-13, excuse me, with more fouls. 8-13 in fouls with more fouls on Houston. Houston had 3 yellow cards. We had 0. We had 6-3 in the corner department with the advantage there. They did have an advantage in the saves. Their keeper was pretty stellar. He had 4 saves, and we only had the 1. So let me just ask you in here, OJ, I'll start with you on this side of things. You know, was there any need, like, do you have any concerns or surprises after the game that you saw on Tuesday, or anything that kind of, you know, reaches out or like kind of speaks to you?
Yeah, I mean, so first of all, the player I noticed the most on City, or I guess the one that stood out to me the most in a surprising way, I guess I shouldn't even say surprising. He's one of the guys we didn't know exactly what to expect from him, Tomas Totland. Like, I don't think he had a goal or an assist or anything, but he did. He made some really slick plays with a lot of pressure on him, like opponents all around him in our own end. You know, high pressure situation. He made some really nice plays to get the ball to a teammate and alleviate that pressure and work it upfield. And like, whereas if he had allowed himself to be stripped of the ball or something, it would have created a really dangerous chance the other way. So I think that it might get to the point when teams get enough video, they might just stop trying to attack that side of the field too much, because he looks like he's going to shut a lot of stuff down. But
which is what you need.
Yeah, it's just a shame he's not a center back, because that's really my concern for us, is how many times those – I hate it. We always get burned on those lob passes over our back line. And, like, I know we keep them high up because we like to do the high press, but – that means we need some people back there that know how to play that. Like, they either need to be really smart about how they play, or they need to be burners. Like, they need to be able to get back quick. And that's where almost all of Houston's most dangerous chances came from, was in transition. it's the same thing as last year. And I was hoping we'd have found a way to alleviate that a little more. From what I understand, we might have some. I think we were missing Nilsson. Leuven didn't play most of the match. But yeah, when we put Nilsson back in, that might actually help things a lot. So hopefully he's in good shape, because I think he would replace Yarrow, who was kind of the guy that was getting taken advantage of a little
pressure.
Bit.
The most yeah, player. A lot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he's really more of a guy you should bring on for like the last 35 minutes or something, not your starter. But
yeah, some of that, it has the advantage of having, you know, fresh legs compared to, you know,
exactly.
You know, strikers that are trying to run against them and stuff like that. I agree with that, you know, analysis for sure.
Yeah.
So, you know, Adam, what was your takeaway on?
Yeah. So for me, while the win, of course, against Houston, at least the first of two games, you know, that did get us off to a positive start, which is exciting. But I think, you know, for me, the match really laid bare our Achilles heel, and that was finishing for sure. I mean, obviously, if it wasn't for Parker's, you know, 90th minute goal there, we would have wound up, you know, with a tie there. And so at least going into the second game, we're going to have the aggregate, you know, basically we'll be up a goal, thankfully. But for me, really, it's one thing to create chances, but I've been noticing converting them is really what wins games. And I know that our coach was pointing that out and saying, hey, we had a lot of missed opportunities. But I will say it does seem that our defense is definitely stepping up, you know, and contributing in that way, you know, at least contributing goals and whatnot. And the team shows a lot of great spirit, determination overall. But I think really for looking forward to the season as a whole, I think that our forwards definitely need to find their scoring, you know, opportunities and figure that out very quickly. And OJ, you mentioned a couple injuries. For us, it's going to be critical, you know, critical to get some rest for the team, and so that way they can get back in there.
Yeah, let me tell you real quick. In the case of one of them, I think it's just a green card issue.
Was it?
The Dyer guy.
Yeah. Dyer, and then
him, I think it was something different. I think they just, or he's still getting acclimated or something, because I think he signed.
And then Indiana Vasilev he's dealing with a wrist fracture, I think. So
yeah,
he's expected to be coming back though. I'm reading and continue playing with the brace eventually. So
yeah, he played with it a little bit without a brace last
year. Yeah. So, but yeah, looking at it from a fan's perspective, you know, I would say there's definitely potential there. But I just think it's going to take some fine tuning in those final moments, you know? So they just need to step it up. So hopefully, because Houston's not, you know, they have been obviously a pretty crappy team, so we shouldn't struggle very much against Houston. So I think in that match, we definitely saw some struggle there. But then again, it's a fresh season, so to speak, or, you know, fresh off our last season, I should say. So, you know, we got to kick the rust off a little bit. But I think that overall, I'm feeling positive still.
For me, I think that a lot of it comes into staying within our game. So if you look at it right, they were Houston possessed the ball 60% of the time, but they only had 6 shot attempts and 2 of them on net, right? That's positive. That's what you want. However, look at their fouls, you know, 13 to our 8, 3 yellows against, you know, they're obviously getting frustrated, but they were trying to play very physical against us. And my whole thing is we can't play that way, because we're going to end up getting burnt, especially in the back line. If you're trying to be too aggressive through the middle of the field by trying to, you know, go in with an extra slide tackle or trying to be like aggressive and like retaliate, so to speak, I think you're going to end up getting burnt. We just need to be able to play, you know, city soccer and be able to go out there and play the way that we want to play. We're very good on the counter. We can put pressure on. We are very organized when we are in those situations and when the other team is scrambling. I mean, that's what we need, right? I don't feel that if we deviate from that, I just feel like we're going to have a really bad time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I actually kind of like I think they mixed it up a lot, a little bit at least, which I know they did it last year. Like sometimes they'll start to use a little few different formations. I'd like to see that a little bit, but I think right now they're going to keep it pretty basic. I mean, you get into the swing of things. They got some new guys that need to get acclimated and all that. And they can work some of that other stuff in later. But because I really think for this team that in order for them to be truly successful, they do need to be able to mix it up and not just have the one way to attack. Because the problem is when teams just give you the ball, if you can't go score, then they – you know, they got you. They just have to give you the ball and then they just counter. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
So that's what we saw St. Louis struggle with the most last season. So hopefully some of the new guys they got can help them keep the ball or put a little more pressure on offense when we do have the ball, I should say.
Yeah, I think that's the other thing about that, right, is we know our weaknesses from last year. We do need to be able to grab the ball and keep pace. That's going to be the biggest thing about it, right? So, you know, again, it's first game of the quote-unquote new season. Obviously, it's not an MLS match, but it's the first look of, you know, what is to come in the MLS season. So, you know, you kind of take it, for what it is, but, you know, a win's a win, and you just got to move on, you know, and try to go out and close out Houston, because once you're past that, you got Columbus, and that's going to be a very difficult battle.
Yep. Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, let's head here to our mailbag as we got some more questions from our listeners. And let's go ahead and get to some of these. So question one here is from Matt. What are our thoughts on a 14-team CFP? So college football playoff, is there now talking about expanding it from 12 teams to 14 teams? They're literally having meetings this week about it. Is this better than the 12 format? You know, OJ, I'll start with you here. You know, what's your thoughts out here on the 14-team CFP?
I mean, I think they ought to have – I guess I think they could wait to start talking about that till they see exactly how the 12-team works out. Mm-hmm. But I assume that they want the 14 because they want to make it easier to get more Big Ten and SEC schools in, because they're trying to stipulate we want so many auto bids and all that stuff. And it's like, oh, come on, man. If you're good, you get put in.
And that was my whole thing about it as well. I mean, I think it's crap, because really the two drivers of this are the SEC and the Big Ten trying to get extra bites of the apple. You know, and we already know that. If you look at it from this past year, you would have four SEC teams in, you know, five if you include Texas. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, like, come on now. Like, enough's enough with this stuff. You're not gonna dominate half the field. And I think that there was already so much confusion about the 5+7 because they had to deviate from the 6+6 because, and for anybody that does not know, what I mean by that is five conference champions plus seven of the top other non-champion teams. It was originally 6+6 with essentially the Power Five, and then the best ranked of the other Power Five conference or other five conferences would automatically get bids in six of the best ranked. But since the implosion of the Pac-12 is now they voted on it, and it's 5+7. But I think that what do? You go to 5+9? That doesn't make any sense. I mean, you're letting in like a bunch of great teams for having okay seasons. And some of those you're going to start seeing teams get in there from the SEC or the Big Ten with two losses or three losses. And it's going to be like, really? Like, I don't
feel that's already going to happen. 12. That's already going to happen.
Right. But it would happen way more. That's what I'm saying. All of a sudden you would have like, you know, your undefeated teams, which are like, you know, the top three or four, your one loss teams, which are going to be like down to eight. And if you have the 14, you're probably going to see some three loss teams. And it's like, how the hell are they competing for a national championship? You know what I mean? So it is what it is, but I disagree with it completely. Especially to your point, OJ, you don't even know what you have with 12 yet. We don't know if this format is going to work or not. I mean, they could you know, play it this year and it could be a complete disaster. And, you know, where things are not balanced or, you know, there's not enough response from the fans, whatever have you. So then why expand it to 14 if the 12 won't work? You know what I mean?
And, I mean, you also got to – I mean, these are still technically college students as well. So
You got to start. Yeah. Got to watch how long you run the season at some point too. So I don't know when we get the point where that's too long. You know what I mean?
I mean, oh, for sure. The NCAA hasn't, you know, called the, they call them student athletes, but they haven't looked at them as student athletes for God knows 100 years. You know what I mean? So, yeah, pretty much.
At least they're
getting paid. To do whatever the hell they want. Yeah, I mean, at least they're getting paid now. And you know, they actually just got announced too that they the opt-in waiver for the new EA college football game came out, so that's going to help too for some of the players for their name and likeness, right? So even if you're not like getting an NIL deal, you can get $600 and a copy of the game to say, hey, you know, I play college football and here I'm immortalized.
I'm in the game.
I'd be
literally, yeah, pretty cool. We're in the game.
I might collectively bargain for more, but
yeah, it depends on, you know, I think they're going to have to keep, and I think that was the thing that EA said, that they're like, they have to keep it like at a flat rate. You know what I mean? Yeah. Because if not, you're going to have your, you know, your Bo Nixes and your Jalen Daniels and your Caleb Williams, they're going to be like, oh, give me $1 million to be a part of this game. You know what I mean?
I wonder how much it would be worth it to them, really, because, you know, they made it so many years without the players' name or image or likeness, right? So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but yeah, I think $600 for all the football players that are in college football, that's a lot, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, so. I know. That's what I'm saying. If I was the players, if I'm trying to maximize my value, I'd have to figure how much is this really worth to them? Like,
but at the same time, and I'll just look at it from a different perspective, you do not want to be part of that decision as a player that killed this game, that you know thousands of people have been begging for forever.
Well,
and all of a sudden, because you want more
ESPN
money,
just won't use it, your,
it's one of those things.
Likeness. People liked it plenty enough without that shit before.
That's true.
But so at the same
it also
time,
works to like maybe you should just take the 600 in the game, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Not going to get anything. Adam, what were you saying?
Yeah, I was going to say it's kind of like the whole, you know, debate about the Super Bowl, right? Because, you know, halftime show, they don't get paid anything or like, you know.
That's true,
but
yeah.
The thing is like they're getting the publicity and everything else. And in a sense, this is sort of the, you know, like they're, it's part of the experience, you know.
Yeah.
They're going to make up plenty of money in the NIL if they, you know, if they're a good player, you know, or have name recognition anyway. I don't, like you said, Josh, I don't think I'd be the one that would want to potentially kill the game or whatever, be that guy. Considering it's like, okay, clearly if everybody is negotiating for ridiculous rates, they're not going to be able to do this. And they're just going to go right back to pulling the plug on, you know, putting them actually in the game and whatnot. So, you know,
right,
people aren't necessarily playing just because, oh, so-and-so is in the game. You know, it's like, well, they're doing that because they're obviously already fans anyway of college football.
Exactly.
So, you know,
they care much more about the jersey than the player.
Right. So, exactly. Yeah. But I just wanted to bring up, though, just a couple things about this discussion. So I wanted to mention that obviously some negatives, at least about this, looking at it, I think it would bring up some logistical hurdles for sure. Expanding it out an additional two teams on top of this. And I think that could also potentially cause some, you know, scheduling problems and whatnot. And kind of back to your point of these are college students at the end of the day. It's going to be kind of messy. You know, the more that you expand this, the more it's, you're going to have to coordinate. And that ultimately could dilute the quality of play in the end of it as well. You know, if new additions aren't coming up to the current standards. So, you know, it's also going to be interesting, you know, if they do this, how they're going to adjust that playoff format, you know, to accommodate more teams. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Go on.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, I like that part of what I like about expanding it to 12 is that I do think it's, you should be given a couple of mistakes during the season, because sometimes teams develop as the season goes on, especially teams that have to recruit heavily through the transfer portal.
Right.
So sometimes you might have a team that actually legitimately might be the best team in the country, and they might stumble once or twice. That shouldn't automatically preclude you from even attempting to compete for the championship.
Right. You know exactly. So exactly. I know exactly what you mean with that, for sure. Hell, not to make an NFL reference here, but I'm going to. It's like the fact that all the Raiders fans want to keep talking about how the Chiefs, you know, lost to them in the regular season, but guess who won the Super Bowl? I'm just saying. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah,
had exactly. Some shit games, but hey, we ended up winning it all. So, you know, and they should have that same kind of right, you know. It's like, hey, they're still a better team, even though they stumbled through a couple of games.
And you don't want to honestly have an entire season decided by two specific things. One, like, you know, once in a lifetime type of plays, mm-hmm. like the pick six and the Iron Bowl, for example, you know, that knocked Alabama out of contention when, you know, they're going for a field goal, long field goal, and they run it back like for a touchdown. Like that shit just doesn't happen. Right. And the second thing, too, that especially if you're going to continue to play later and later into the season is weather.
Yeah, that's weather, very true.
You know, it affects the games in a significant way. I mean, you know, Adam and I, you know, watched the Miami Kansas City game.
It was negative 40 degrees.
Yeah, historically cold weather, and it brought the high powered offense of Miami to their absolute knees because they just not used that type of weather, right? And especially if you're going to have a lot of teams that are, you know, now that we have, you know, you have Stanford that's playing the ACC. You know, it's just you're going through completely different climates. And, you know, a lot of teams in the West, or like in the West Coast, are now going up into like Big Ten territory where there's going to be snow. They're not used to that, you know, playing in Cali,
fair advantage,
and stuff like that. So I think that, you know, to your point, OJ, I think that 12 teams is a good format, especially for now. And then if you're not going to go from 12 to 14, to me, you would go from 12 to 16. But again, you're going to have to like cross that hurdle as it comes. You know what I mean? So,
Yeah. I mean, I think they definitely have to evaluate the 12 team format first before we can even consider the 14 team league. That just, you know, that just doesn't make sense. You gotta take it step by step. So,
yeah.
All right, guys, well, let's get to our second question here. This is from Tom. Will MLB change back to their older uniforms?
God, and, I hope so.
You know, Adam, I'll start with you on this one. You know, what's your take here? Do you think they'll change back to their old uniforms?
I don't know the details when it came to like the contract with Fanatics and Nike or whatever, but I'm telling you right now, money talks, and MLB is not going to sell this shit. I mean, you know, they're not going to sell these things. They are going to lose their ass. If you don't already know, and like I pointed out to you guys earlier, you know, to Josh and to OJ, the freaking pants literally are see-through. Yeah. I mean, I'm not talking they're clear, but the fact is they are so thin, you can see the player's freaking lining of the jersey through the pant. And in fact, even the tag, like, you know, in the lower portion of the jersey on the, like on the lower left leg, per se, you'll see the actual tag, and I'm like, how tacky. And none of the players like it. I think, I swear that the players that are coming out there and endorsing this are probably getting in some kickback or whatever from freaking Nike or Fanatics or something.
They have some endorsement shit for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
The fact is, money talks. No one's going to buy this shit. They're going to wind up, and they're going to have to change the quality of this. And they're going to have to. There's no doubt about it, because they're not going to lose their asses on this stuff and just have a bunch of unsold merchandise that nobody's going to buy. I have yet to hear one person that's willing to purchase that crap.
Yeah. I actually heard that the players' union is involved now too. So
good.
There's actually a good chance they change.
Yeah, Tony Clark. Yeah, Tony Clark is the MLBPA executive director. Yeah, he is now at spring training, which is not something that normally happens. So he can see in firsthand. And he's saying that it was interesting. So the quote that he had to ESPN was that, you know, this is like a lot of people complain about stuff. And he's like, there was a lot of rhetoric and you just needed to like try to make sense of it all. But when you get there, it's clear as day that there's an issue. And so it's just like, man, that's sad. Right. And I think a lot of the pressure is, sorry, Adam, I'll make this point, then I'll toss it back to you. But I think the problem with Manfred, for with the MLB is like, well, we wore these last year in the All-Star game. Well, yeah, but it was also a thicker material because you're making it for only like, you know, 50 players and not a couple hundred. And that's been the biggest problem. Yeah. Adam,
I just want to say, why didn't they try this trial run during spring training?
Yeah. Well, that's what it is, right?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's not a trial. But the fact is this is committed. Oh. We're like, this is what the new uniforms are, period, for the season. Yeah, but the fact is, it's like, okay, we're going to try this out in season, you know, in spring training or whatever. We'll order some of these and kind of like, let's give it a trial run and see, you know, how the players react, if they really like it overall. What do the fans think? Blah, 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 blah. Get the feedback. Like, you know, run a prototype. A little bit bigger sampling size than the All-Star game. And like you said, that was thicker material anyway. But these are their everyday uniforms. You need to get a bigger sample size. You need to be able to actually get real gameplay, because honestly, no offense to the All-Star game, but that's not real gameplay that's happening in the All-Star game. They get like maybe an inning or two if you're lucky and you're out. You know what I mean? So
Well, also players have said that no, it's definitely different from the All-Star game.
So, for sure. But even if it was the same, it's not really a trial. It's not. But even if it was exactly the same, you can't really use that as a trial, because it was one game. It was a like 50 players, and they're only out on the field for a couple of innings at most. So even if it was identical at that point, I'm just saying, and it's so that absolutely nullifies the fact that you need to try this shit out, especially being so drastic of a change.
Yeah.
Like, I think didn't that they put this before like a board or like, you know, like
The MLB board, but now the PA is not involved.
Like, I'm just talking about like, you know, before the pub, not the public, but you come in for studies, you know what I mean? Like they do, you know, anonymous studies and whatnot, and like get feedback from the consumers and shit, or, you know, or from players, who knows? I don't know, man. They've really botched this, and I still mind blown that Nike would put their reputation on the line and put their fucking logo on this shit. It's mind blowing.
They were crossing their, I think they were crossing their fingers they could slip this one by people, because I was listening to Bernie Miklas, and the point he brought up is they announced all these changes through like beat reporters. Usually they would have like a press release or something from MLB say, hey, we're changing the uniform. They did it like in a quiet way, essentially.
They're probably like, this is not going to go over well.
It wasn't a big announcement, essentially. And I'm telling you right now, the biggest change or the biggest eye opener is going to be when these spring games start, because when you have younger players that are going to be, you know, competing for roster spots, and obviously veterans trying to keep their jobs, when they start diving around and stuff like that, all of a sudden pants start tearing because like, you know, they're thinner materials. And I mean, if you can see through them and like, and they can, they're taking this, the fact that like, the fact that you can see the shape of them, I was like, come on. Yeah.
I saw vaporware. I'm like, listen, that's code for we used as little material as possible.
Does it, you know, vaporware? Hold on, vaporware. Doesn't it sound like a Trojan? Doesn't it sound like a Trojan condom? Like vaporware.
Yeah, it's like you're wearing it really nothing. Does.
It really does.
They should be sponsored by Nike.
It's like it's not even there.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, no, it's pretty pathetic.
Yeah.
Oh my God. So I think there's a good chance they wear something different in the regular season.
Adam, I'm telling you right now, if we go to a baseball game, I'm going to get thin as fuck baseball pants, and I'm going to put the Trojan logo on them and put down like something on the side of it. Like, it's like they're wearing nothing at all.
It's like you're wearing nothing at all.
I just, I would just buy a jersey from last year if you can find them. Cause like,
oh, no, I'm talking about like, I'll just buy cheap baseball pants. Yeah, that's what I was getting at. I'm not going to go buy their pants. Bullshit. Yeah.
Well, they're even thinner, and they're and everything on them are stickers anyway, you know?
Yeah, the pants that I can get from Amazon are thicker. They're going to be better. The ones that they're selling,
AliExpress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
AliExpress, or I guess DH gets the new one.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you can probably find some that's roughly equivalent in quality for, like, $30.
I would be pissed, though, if I was a player. I'd be like, are you serious right now?
Oh, I would be too. Like, look, I have to tailor my own pants. Like, you're just going to give me some pants.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to tailor your own pants that you're going to see through.
So imagine being a rookie. So you're in the minor leagues for like 8 years, and all of a sudden you finally get your shot, and this is the shit that you're wearing.
You're like, wow. Like, I feel like I'm doing a downgrade.
That's what Michael has said. He's like, it made it feel like major league when you would get those major league uniforms. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, that's gone. People are like, really? This is what this show's about, huh?
Embarrassing.
Soon the jersey is just going to be written in green crayon. You know what I mean? Like, here you go. Here's a stencil. Like, color in your number and your name.
Like, I mean, are they going for, like, super cash? I mean, if this is the case.
They'll just have the home team wear a light blue shirt and the away team will wear an orange shirt, just like Rocket. We won't even have jerseys.
There you go. Or I was thinking, like, since we're going super casual, let's go out there in, like, pajama pants or something, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Jesus, man.
Freaking ridiculous. So, Tom, the answer is they will change it or they will lose their ass. And we know they like money, so they will change it.
Yep. Yeah. Let's get to our last one here. And this is going to require some thought from you two as well. So I'll go ahead and start because I've already answered this when this question was asked of me. So this is from Corey, and this is a very good question. If you could retire three current or former Blues players' numbers that have not yet been retired, what would they be and why? So, you know, it could be anybody that is on the current team or anybody that has played on the Blues. But, you know, why would you retire the number? Who would they be? And so on and so forth. So I'll go ahead and start since I answered this one. I have the three that, to me, number 27 in Alex Pietrangelo. I know he betrayed us by going to Vegas, but he was here for a very long time. He was the first captain, the first Blue to ever touch the Stanley Cup in a winning capacity in a Blues blue sweater. You know, I don't like his move to Vegas. I thought it was very not forward thinking of him. Obviously, he won another cup there. But regardless, I mean, he obviously meant a lot to our organization. And, you know, I think he's going to live down in history regardless. I think it eventually will happen. You know, who knows? Maybe it won't, but yeah, I don't know. My second one, and I cannot believe he's already not there. Number 38, Pavel Dimitra. Like, how is Dimitra's jersey?
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Not been retired. I mean,
I thought they did that recently. I'm looking on their website, but they don't say that. Didn't they have his family out one night? I thought that was.
I don't know if they actually retired.
He was inducted. He was inducted into the St. Louis Hall of Fame.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
They don't retire number 38. No.
Sorry. Yeah. No, I agree strongly. No,
obviously. Yeah, and him and obviously his tragic death. You know.
Yeah. No, he meant a lot to his.
I had childhood. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. I watched games a lot with him and Brett Hall. Like it was. He was a gritty player that never gave. He was like Bobby Barker. I mean, that's what he was like to me. You know, or Bobby Plager. I said Barkley, my bad, but you know what I mean. Plager. Right. He just reminded me of that player that had the grit, you know what I mean? The determination. Yeah. I'm gonna bowl over you if you have to. I'm gonna score or I'm gonna do whatever I have to, you know, win this game for my team. You know, I loved watching Pavel Dimitra play. So I'm surprised that he's not there. Maybe eventually will happen. And the other one, the last one that I have, Mike Liotte. Like, really? How is he not in? I mean, he was one of the best goaltenders. Actually, still holds a bunch of records for us as a goaltender. He is, I believe, I know he's in the St. Louis Hall of Fame. I think he's an actual NHL Hall of Famer. Why is his jersey not been retired? Why is the number one not up in the rafters, right?
Yeah.
I think that's very interesting. But, you know, those are my three. It took me a while to kind of figure that, you know, I try to get off of bias, you know, like of, you know, TJ Oshie. I mean, that's not going to happen. You know, as much as he means to me, you know, Tarasenko, I thought was also,
I was thinking Tarasenko. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm just kind of throwing some names out there. Like, kind of Mike Mitchell. Obviously an easy one could be Gretzky, but
yeah, but he didn't really, not really for me, because the fact is he wasn't really here, you know, very long.
Well, here's the thing about it. Technically Gretzky's number has been retired across all.
That's true.
It's like Jackie Robinson, right? Yeah, his number has been retired across all NHL teams because of his impact in the game period.
Right.
So, you know, he's not going to have his jersey up in the rafters, but it's in
obviously nobody's
every
gonna wear
freaking
it
building.
Yeah, exactly. For sure. Yeah, so named it definitely a few good names for sure. that I would definitely consider.
What about you, Adam?
I think there could be a few others like that just kind of popped in my head, like Keith Kachuk potentially. You know, I think he might be a possibility. He obviously had a significant impact, you know, whenever he was here at the Blues, obviously known for his physical play, goal scoring ability. You know, he was definitely a, I think, key figure in our offense, and he was a leader on and off the ice. So trying to think who else. Maybe you mentioned obviously Tarasenko. I was thinking about him. You already mentioned Petro. Maybe David Backes. I don't know, just because he was our captain for a while, and he was obviously, you know, another leader on or off the ice for sure. And you know, he certainly, you know, played a big crucial role to some of our playoff, you know, appearances whenever he was here. And I think he was well respected as well in the locker room and around the community. Trying to think who else. Maybe Roar. I don't know. I mean, he definitely played an integral part in our team. Obviously in 2019 for sure, you know, and obviously serving shortly there for our captain for a while as well. But, you know, he definitely made a significant contribution, you know, both offensively, defensively, overall, you know. So those are just a few that kind of come to mind. I'd have to really think about it, but those are the
Yeah, I know. That's why I started. It's a very hard one to narrow down.
Yeah, those are just like a three people I can just like name off the top of my head that you haven't already named.
Right. No, I'm with you. OG, what about you?
So I want to go Dimitra, then probably Backes. I'd say, see, it's hard if without having time to actually like look at all their numbers.
Right, really make a call.
But this is just kind of my impressions. I feel like Steen played a pretty big role for a long time.
He was on my list too.
Mm. It was a part of his selflessness that you know, helped us win the cup as well. I mean, he's more than happy to play a fourth line role, and a lot of other players might have refused to do that. And I mean,
he wore the note on his chest proudly.
Yeah, and I've even, you know, I've heard that he went to, you know, some of the, like, Maroon and those guys when they were coming in and said, your voice matters too and all that stuff. And basically, he is part of his, he did a lot to help that team gel and everything also. Like, I just think he's a team first guy. Good, you know, really good player for a long time. Definitely deserves the award for that. So, and then let's see, what, I get another one? And... who was I thinking? I almost kind of want to put TJ Oshie in there just for Sochi Olympics. Like,
oh yeah, that is true. I mean, everyone continues to forget that. I mean, like, he won us the game against Russia. I mean, the dude is just ridiculous on shooting.
Yeah, that was one of the coolest things I've ever seen. I mean, he basically just went toe to toe with Russia's best throughout the entire shoot-off.
Like, it's just Bavovsky. Like, Bavovsky. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, and like, I think they had. Who was on Russia? Because Russia kept – God, now I'm forgetting who they
were. Halogatsu went twice. Yeah. I can't remember. Yeah. But they changed it up every single time. Besides Halogatsu, who went twice. He went first and fourth, if I remember correctly. Halogatsu did.
Yeah, and then I think they had one other guy that went like three times or something like that. But, yeah, that's pretty epic. He came up with us, spent a lot of time – his early career with us. Like, could see it.
I mean, obviously my first dog has been named after TJ Oshie. The guy had a huge impact in my life and brought me back to hockey after the lockout. You know, I was done with hockey. I thought the players were very selfish because, again, being a younger kid, didn't really understand what they were fighting for and stuff like that, and didn't want to come back to hockey. And then watching on the glass, I remember it vividly when I'm like, I have got to start watching Blues hockey. If you guys remember, TJ Oshie was in a penalty box. He came out of the penalty box on when Columbus was on a power play when Rick Nash was there. And absolutely just – he made a beeline right to Rick Nash. Rick Nash passed the puck off, did not see TJ Oshie at all, and TJ Oshie just absolutely took his head off. That's when I was like, oh, my God, that guy is a freaking lightning rod. I mean, obviously, he's very talented with being able to move the puck and stuff like that, but the physicality he plays with – you know, it means a lot to me as well. So, I mean, yeah, I would definitely support that one, OJ. I tell you one that I honestly thought that you were going to say, OJ, was Pierre Turgeon. I really thought that you're going to be like with me too, because Pierre Turgeon was on my short list as well. Yep.
I could see that too. So actually, I would switch him out, because you know, for a sec, I was for a second there, I was thinking of the Blues, like Blues Hall of Fame or whatever, not like number.
Yeah.
Like, I do think, probably not number retirement for TJ Oshie.
Yeah.
I don't think he played long enough for that. But I still could see Steen. Honestly, I'd really have to do a lot more research, because I think a lot of the guys we named probably wouldn't fit with what it looks like some of the standards are.
Of course.
I'm trying to think. Mm-hmm. I'm coming up with a couple more names. I've been kind of doing a little digging here. Another name that pops into my mind, Bear Jackman.
Yeah,
but Bear Jackman's number is already retired because of Bobby Plager, and you're not going to
put Bear Jackman. You're right. Mm-hmm. I didn't even think about that. That's a very good point.
So when they retired Bobby Plager, because remember, I actually worked that game when I was working for the Blues. I didn't think about that.
And
this was one of the classiest things. So when we were, we were setting up the stage and stuff like that, listen, Bobby Plager was a character. He would talk to anybody. He was so awesome. He had great stories. He would always ask, how you're doing. He might not remember your name, but he was like, I remember you talking to you about something specific. I mean, he talked to everybody. He was always really nice to us. Most of the players were really nice. Bear Jackman, I hate to say, it was kind of a dick. Like, even when I was a fan, he was kind of a dick. But regardless, like, he was but we were setting up, everything or whatever. And Bobby, obviously, is already emotional about the walk on the ice. And someone someone from my team asked him, how you doing? What do you think of the honor and stuff? He's like, oh, it's a great honor or whatever. And then he kept looking over and he's like, where's Barrett? And so we didn't know that he was talking about Jackman or whatever, because he was not originally supposed to be there. Barrett Jackman was not originally supposed to be there. Bobby Plager said that the last person that wore that jersey was Barrett Jackman. So he needed to have Barrett Jackman's blessing to have that number retired.
Yeah.
What a straight class act move. Wow. You know what I mean? Like, come on. That's awesome. That's just, it was the coolest thing. That
is cool for sure.
And if you remember, Barrett Jackman actually talked as well during his retirement.
Yeah.
I thought that it was just a really classy move. You know what I mean? And then for them, meaning the Blues, to be able to put him right next to his brother, Barkley. That lower down Barclays.
And it was like, that was so emotional. Like, not a dry eye on the house.
I was crying on the ice. Adam, I was crying on the ice, and I had nothing to do with it. You know?
That was one of the best.
Wonderful moment.
Yeah. That was one of the best for sure. But yeah, I didn't even think about Jackman wearing number 5, but that's a very good point. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, we could talk about this stuff all day, because to your point, OJ, it comes to some of these players like OJ or TJ Oshie means a lot to me, but does he statistically going to be able to be someone that you retire the number of? I mean, like, they don't do it in hockey, but like, it's like what they do in football, where they have like the circle of honor, where they have their name up there, or whatever, not retiring their number, but retiring like the name. Yeah, they're honored and stuff like that. The ring of honor. That's what a TJ Oshie, David Perron, like David Backes, those guys set the foundation for all of us. And that's the only thing that really still to me, honestly, is like a nagging itch that I can never scratch, that David Backes never won a Stanley Cup. Yeah. You know, that like TJ Oshie won one, obviously, with Washington, the year before us. But, so that one, like, cool, you feel good about that. But David Backes never winning it. That really like that hurt me, the fact that he sacrificed so much for this team and never got one on a different team either. And unfortunately, we took away his best chance. You know what I mean? Like,
sure did.
It is what it is, though.
But yeah. And I will say, looking at the guys whose numbers they have retired, I don't think the standards for actual like stats and stuff is as high as maybe for like the Cardinals. Like the Cardinals, you basically have to be a Hall of Famer in order to have your number retired. That's clearly not the case with the Blues. So, like, I could see certainly Backes, Turgeon, Backes, Turgeon, Dimitra. Like, those are really good picks for it, I think, honestly.
Yeah, but, I mean, if you do take a look at it, so McGinnis is obviously a Hall of Famer. Bobby and Barkley, Plager, both Hall of Famers. Brian Sutter is a Hall of Famer. Brett Hall is a Hall of Famer. Bernie Federko is a Hall of Famer. Chris Pronger, I think, it is or will be. Gassoff, I think, is as well. That's all of them.
I didn't know Gassoff. I thought Gassoff was.
That's what I'm saying. He's the only one I'm questionable about. But anyways, you know, to your point, you know, it doesn't matter. I mean, like, they could do whomever that they want to, because it's just how it's meaningful to the St. Louis Blues. You know what
right.
I mean?
Right.
So
true.
Kind of like what they're doing with the St. Louis Hall of Fame thing, kind of like what the Cardinals do.
Exactly.
They have their own Hall of Fame to honor them, and they, you know, their red jackets and whatnot for the Cards, for example. It's the same thing, you know, they give them a kind of a special honor.
They're not necessarily retired
numbers.
If we are going to hold players to that level, I don't know that the Blues have many Hall of Famers.
We've only been around
since 67.
That's the thing, we have a storied tradition for a very long time.
Oh, there we go. Booch Davis just got a hat trick.
Did he? Hell yeah. Let's go, Booch.
It was like, wow. I think it was an empty
well, good for him.
10.5 minutes left in the third?
Wait a minute, hold on. But did he score the first or second goal, OJ?
Second.
He scored a second, so that's a natural hat trick.
Is that a natty? Yeah.
That's a natural hat trick.
Wow.
So for anybody that does not know what that is, that's a natural hat trick. It's 3 goals in a row by the same player without anybody else scoring on either team.
That's a natty.
So yeah, that's a natural hat trick. That's pretty badass.
That is awesome, dude.
It certainly is.
Wait a minute. There's like 10 minutes left.
It was a backhander from across the red line?
So they already pulled a goalie and there's like 11 minutes left?
They were down by 3, was it on a power play or anything? Or
no, it doesn't look like it. It looked like, I don't know. I was
sure enough. I just looked at the Blues Twitter page, and sure enough, they pulled the goalie with 10:55 left. You don't see that too often. They pull a goalie that early.
You definitely do not.
Yeah, and Vucevic backhanded it in from the red line.
Hell, the way they're going with it, with 11 minutes, unless they're going to put their goalie back out there. But if they're going to keep it empty, shit, I think you might be able to go back to back to back.
There you go.
Oh, man.
Back to back to back.
Wow. Natural hat trick.
Natural hat
trick. All right, here's cool. So I will give you guys this one real quick. Before we head to our sign out, who's the last player to have 4 natural goals scored in a row? So again, it's not, you know, a natural hat trick, but a natural 4 goal game.
I have no idea. Was it Laine?
Gretzky? I don't know.
Laine? It would be number 42, David Backes, against the Detroit Red Wings. I watched that game specifically, and he scored 5 goals, but 4 of them were natural, like 4 in a row. He scored 5 goals that game. And there was a lot of push to try to get him to a 6 goal, which would have tied the NHL record and would have gotten the NHL record, the Blues record. But he obviously couldn't do it. So, but yes, the Blues, I think, won like 7-1 or 7-2 that game. But I would watch that game specifically, and I remember it very vividly.
And just for the record, too, that was Bucci's second hat trick this season as well.
There you go. All right, guys. Well, thank you very much to the listeners for the questions. Please keep the questions coming so we can continue our mailbag segment, so we can continue answering your questions, because I definitely enjoy them, that's for sure. And it makes you think a lot more than just talk about general stuff. So please appreciate that, and please keep those coming. Why don't we head to our sign out here? Adam, would you like to tell the good listeners how they can interact with us, like some of these guys have, and you know, ask some questions and stuff? Adam, take it away.
I would love to. So check us out on Facebook, facebook.com// Hometown Losers. That's spelled LOUSERS. Or check us out on X.com/ Hometown Losers. Give us a like, give us a share. Tell your family, tell your friends, hide your kids, hide your wife. But but above all else, send in your questions.
Because they're streaming everywhere anyways.
Hell yeah. Now, OJ, let's hear the game of the week.
All right. Game of the week. There's only one. Can only be one. The St. Louis City MLS season opener against Real Salt Lake at St. Louis. I also want to just really quick point out that the score app that I use, I think it was originally made in Europe, because
whenever, like, if I look at the Blues game, it has the home team second, like we normally do it. But then for St. Louis City, it has the, because I guess because it's soccer, it has the home team first, like they do it in Europe. So I got really confused. I was like, I thought it was in Salt Lake for a second.
Gotcha.
No, yeah. I'm so, like, I've watched so much soccer over the years that I knew that was, like, the way that they did it. Yeah, they flip it. Like, it's still a change because, like, if you're just glancing at it, ESPN, you're like, oh, shit.
Yeah, all American sports typically, yeah, it's the other way around. So.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The app should make it all one way. Like, don't mix it. Like, that's terrible. Yeah. But anyway, so, yeah, that's your game of the week, 7:30 on Saturday. St. Louis versus Real Salt Lake.
Sounds great. Well, thank you so much for that, OJ. Now let's throw it over to Josh for the final whistle.
Sports Blast.
There we go.
Oh, I forgot it.
You want to re-record that part or no?
Yeah, re-record that.
All right, that's fine. So go ahead, Adam. All right,
you forgot his line. I should have said line. I was like, just to fuck with him.
it's Snap Blast, yeah. Okay, yeah. So ready? 3, 2, 1.
All right, thanks for that, OJ. Appreciate it, and looking forward to that game. So now let's throw it over to Josh for the final whistle.
Snap Blast!
All right, guys. So I do have two of them here. One quirky one, and then one actual statistic that I think some people may know. Some people, but a lot of people I don't think would know. So the first one here, this is a weird, weird thing that I was able to dig up. So up until 1937, NBA referees threw a tip-off, just like you normally do. You know, have a tip-off at the beginning of the game. They tipped off after every single basket. So that way it was like a face-off in hockey where you have an even chance of being able to possess the puck first. They did that after every single basket. God. Unless it was a foul, of course, and you know you do your two shots if you need it and stuff like that. But after every possession score, they went back to corner the center and re-tipped the ball. Crazy.
Wow. Christ.
So they probably had rotator cuff problems.
So did the clock stop then after every single clock, one?
Yep.
So it's literally like freaking football. Like they literally, it's like, okay, stop the clock. We got to punt the ball. All right, now we're going to go again. It's literally like,
and obviously the game is what back then was much slower, but imagine doing that now when you have guys like Stephen Curry, who can just sneak it from half court.
Stupid.
Are you kidding me?
You'd be sitting in the middle of the damn court, the half the game.
Yeah.
Well, no, like, think about it, dude.
The whole game.
Create a whole specialization. Like, you literally would have tip-off specialists. Like,
that's literally all it would be. They just stand there. Okay, whoever wins the tip-off, they make they dunk it, and then it's like, okay, and we're back.
Yeah. Teams would be scouring the face of the earth for like 7'3" people and teaching them to play basketball.
They already are, but yeah.
Yeah. But to just shoot from half court.
I mean, you would like have to have.
That would be a very weird sport. I'm not gonna lie, if
they
did.
You couldn't have like what they do, like have the hybrid centers, like they do. Like I think for the Golden State Warriors, I think Draymond Green like acts as their center a lot, and I think he's only like 6'7", right, which is pretty small for like a center. Like Anthony Davis is I think 7'1" or 7'2". You know what I mean? So like that's interesting.
Yeah. Very interesting stat.
Yeah. All right, so the second one I have here, this one's an actual statistical thing, right? So we all know Hank Aaron, right? Hank Aaron,
sure,
the home
do.
Run king, what I believe to be the true home run king. But anyways.
Totally agree.
So this was one that most people probably do know if they pay attention to his stats. So obviously he had a career home runs of 755. But he never actually had a season where he hit 50 home runs in a single season, right?
Really?
That is most people, I'm surprised actually, Adam, with all the baseball knowledge you have, I'm surprised you did not know that, but the most he ever hit in one single season was 47, if I remember correctly. 47, that was back in 71.
I mean, his whole career probably looked like Albert Pujols' first, like, 10, you know? Yeah. Like
100%, yeah, like, you know, you're looking at 10, 12, 20, 40, 34, 47, 38, 44, like, and then he's just in the 40s and like high 30s all the time, right?
Right.
But this is the actual stat, and this is the craziest thing, right? So if you take away his 755 home runs,
the dude's probably still a Hall of Famer because he still has over 3,000 hits. He would be still, if you take away the 755 home runs, he would still have 3,016 career hits.
Wow. Unreal, well, he played a long time. I'm looking to see how many years Cameron did he play? Like 22 years?
22 years, correct.
Yeah. He played a long
very
time.
Consistent and very durable.
The fact that he was that old going into his last seasons there and he was hitting, hell, like near whenever he was like in his 19th career, hell, 18th career season. He was hitting 40 home runs. And at 18th career or season in his career. Ugh, yeah. I can't even speak. Yeah, damn, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's wild,
dude.
They built him different back then, I guess.
I mean, jeez, that's the goat right there.
They built some of the pitchers different back then, too, so I guess.
Yeah, like Bob Gibson and stuff, you know. They literally had to change. Bob Gibson changed the game because they had to change the mound. Crazy. Yep. That's how good he was, but.
I love this. Yeah, I love Bob Gibson too. It's so
awesome. Oh my god! Like, I was able
lower
to
lower the mound 5 inches.
OJ, I'm gonna have to get that to you eventually. I found some old video of him like pitching and stuff like that, just so you can have it. It's just freaking awesome. I'm like, watching him dominate.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure you have, but like some of these are like full game. Full game broadcast and stuff. Yeah.
You know, and the thing is even after they lowered the mound, he still went on and he was still really damn good too.
Still dominant.
He's like, still dominant. Even after they lowered the mound by 5 inches, he was still dominant.
Absolutely.
He was a legend.
All righty, guys. Well, appreciate your time and always enjoy talking St. Louis sports with you guys. For sure. We appreciate the listeners. Thank you again for your questions. Please reach out to us and please interact with the show. We'd love to hear from you guys and we'd love to be able to answer those questions. Until next time, we will see you all here on the Hometown Losers podcast. Have a great night, everybody.
Hey, this is Josh. Thanks for checking out and tuning in to the Hometown Losers podcast. Check us out next week as we continue our silliness and talk a little bit about the St. Louis sports scene. Catch you next week.